I'm off my game today.
No, you're not.
That's true.
People are going to have to start making better content.
I think we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
When you program for everyone, you program for no one.
I think it's that we're a purpose-driven platform. Like, we're trying to get to substance. How was that? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is.
What's up? I'm Laura Carenti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back to Adlandia.
Episode 22.
Double, double.
So coming off the heels of our exclusive with India Acarino and getting to go participate in her State of the Industry Forum with some of the biggest players in the industry, including agency execs, media company owners, trade industry, leadership, marketers, et cetera. I think one of the things that we learned was there's this sort of analysis paralysis going on around the standardization of measurement, something that's been pervasive over the last few episodes of this show. And I think what we're excited about is we have somebody coming on who's talking about right brain, left brain, not sure which side it sits on, but
it's
context.
Like gut and context, along with being underpinned with the data. And I think that the context part of the conversation is one that we constantly kind of point to. And so we're going to have Pierce Fox on, who's the founder of PSFK. I think he's going to talk to us a lot about, you know, what trends can tell you, but if you don't have the context, you're missing the whole insight. And I think that as an industry, going back to Linda Yaccarino and what she was talking about, we've really gotten to this place where we're kind of complacent with what the numbers say. Right.
I think that's important to go into, like, how we've just accepted that latency data in the form of an index is actually one of, or sometimes the only marker that media buyers, for example, are using to make multi-million and billion-dollar decisions in placing their advertising.
Right.
If we know that, you know, insert media company X here is hitting an index of 150 to 250. And if it's over 300, well, shit, we should put all of our dollars there. You know, we're making that decision. And oftentimes that data is really only beginning to scratch at the surface.
Yeah.
And it's often late. It's a panel study that's been done, you know, months prior. And with the speed of which culture in particular is moving right now, you'd be remiss to the fact to say, okay, directionally, that data is telling me that this might be the right place to invest my dollars. But how am I showing up? How am I speaking to people? What is the message that I want to convey? And what about that platform drives a connection? It's not good enough just to show up. It's how.
Yeah, it's how. But I think to your point, when you're getting some kind of report 4 months after the fact and things have already moved on, and then you're using that to base your next
move year's on, plans, right?
Holy moly, what are we doing?
Yeah.
So I think the need for real-time feedback, the need for real-time kind of science and gut has to go together in this business. And I'm not sure we've trained ourselves to be able to think that way at large.
Yeah. And I think as an industry, we need to get smarter about the inputs, you know, and not being, to your word earlier, complacent with just accepting the third parties that we've been using since as long as I've been in this business that have not evolved to even account for things like content or experiences that live in the market. So how are we accounting as budgets continue to move into video, as they move into
virtual
live,
reality,
as they move into tech,
and
these things are not trackable? Well, what are the inputs or the trend reports or the business intelligence as an industry we're starting to look to get that holistic picture? You know, a lot of people that I've come across in the business starting out, and they're like, what are you reading? What are you interested in? And, you know, even, you know, some of the students who have reached out to us on Adlandia saying, you know, how can I think about this thesis differently? Where can I go to be sourcing this sort of information? You have to be a cultural student of this industry. You have to understand that you should be reading Sarah Fisher's Axios every Thursday in her newsletter.
Her media trends report.
You should be looking at the Ad Ages and the Ad Weeks and the Digidays to get sort of the, you know, nuances of how agencies and brands are thinking about their creative messages and technology and all this sort of stuff.
You should be strolling Product Hunt every day to see what's coming out.
Right. And you should also be looking at industry leaders. What are the perspectives and how people are thinking about this? I mean, how many people we following on Twitter just to get alternate perspectives on how people are approaching issues in the industry, like standardization of measurement.
Even policy issue.
Policy.
Yeah.
And you have to go beyond the trades themselves. And that's why business intel, I think, is one of the most underutilized things in this industry from a planning perspective.
Just basic business intel.
That's right.
100%.
Like CNBC, Cheddar, looking at what Brian Stetler's talking about as a media reporter on CNN.
I think the point is right, it's not just about diversity in people, it's diversity in thought.
That's right.
And at the end of the day, that's it, right? Diversity in where you're getting your information. And as much as we are in our social lives, right, and our digital social lives in a kind of echo chamber, we end up doing that to ourselves in our professional lives. And so we become this echo chamber and everyone's kind of head nodding like, yeah, 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 GRP, TRP, yeah, 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 that's the, right?
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, of course. Instead of looking outside. And I think that bringing it back to Pierce, you know, what I love about him is that he kind of like stumbled into creating trend reports because he was just looking around at everything and started spotting signals. And he was really good at pattern recognition, things that people weren't seeing. And I think it behooves all of us to start thinking about what patterns we're seeing.
I mean, I'm obsessed with this notion of non-direct competitors. People that are super serving a like-minded audience or a like-minded business solution that aren't in the same industry. And what can we learn from them? When I look at the direct-to-consumer brands that are in the market, so think Casper, think Away Suitcases.
Yeah.
When you look at all of those brands, what is Allbirds doing that Away Suitcases could learn from? Pop-up stores? Collaborations? Rachel Tipograph talked about sharing pixels. You know, these are all of the things that, you know, culture is informing, that these entrepreneurs and business executives are learning from models that have nothing to do with their line of product or service.
Right.
Oh, well, like, who are the people right now that you're like gravitating to for influence that you take insight from and that you're applying it to marketing projects?
So for me, person of influence, Yayoi Kusama. It's like Infinite Mirrors. These exhibits have been huge at Hirshhorn and all over the world. And what her artist mission is to make people feel purposeful in their life and that they belong to something. And so all of her work is you in her work. So she does this room, white room, with like a desk and chairs and furniture. It's all white. Everything's white. And you go in and you put a colorful sticker, right, on the wall, on the furniture, on anything. And it becomes this, I am an individual, but I am part of a community. I'm part of a collective.
That's cool.
So really, really powerful. And one of her statements is, because she does it with dots, lots of dots. Dots are everywhere. One of her, you know, points is, I want you to feel like you are a dot. You are the only dot, but you are a dot among millions. And I find that this idea of community that she creates in a physical space, but of like pure individualism, so fascinating, magical, and real, right? But it's ethereal and beautiful when you're walking in it. So she's one of my big inspirations right now. She's been huge. I mean, she's probably one of the most Instagrammed artists of our time. So she's really phenomenal. She really inspires me. And I would say that Camilla Harris and Christine Gillibrand, like huge, huge influences. They level the conversation. And they've been huge inspirations.
Yeah, I think I've been drawing a lot of inspiration lately for creativity of thought from actually, I would say, the music world, particularly hip-hop artists lately. I'm enamored with a lot of the work Swizz Beatz is doing with artists.
He just got his MBA from Harvard.
And I think it's just fascinating to see an artist like that step outside of the world of music, probably also drawing inspiration from business and thought leaders. And I think it's really cool. I love what's going on in sneaker culture.
Wait, what's the line that he said?
This is the motto for 2018, people. Seriously, get out your phone and type this down. The sky is not the limit. It's just a view. And if you're not rolling with that in 2018, I don't know what you are. Aside from that, really, really into sneaker culture collaborations right now, loving like the insane artwork and how people are using that as a canvas and the sort of cult community that's creating. You know, Virgil Abloh and his brand Off-White with what they're doing with Nike is just super cool and makes you think about the cross-pollination of art and urban culture and pulling out these ideas and inspirations for people. I just think that's really cool. And the one other thing that I just thought was one of the most unexpected art forms that I saw this year that you can take a lesson from in experience and expression was from Solange. Her album artwork
Agreed.
For A Seat at the Table and how she wrote the album notes, if you go into and how she explains the dichotomy of her music and the lyrics, was absolutely original. It was stunning. It made me reimagine or rethink how I am doing comms planning.
How do you start relating those things together?
So if you, I wish I could have the visual and maybe we'll have to post it, but her album artwork sort of deconstructs her thinking of the lyrics and it takes you through sort of deep dive into what each of those components means. In so much that I think she got such a positive reception from it, she actually went and turned it into an art exhibit in the real world.
Yeah.
And you were able to kind of experience that deconstruction in the form of a museum pop-up. How I apply that is literally thinking about each piece as not just one linear narrative,
yeah,
but the element of purpose and contribution those thoughts goes into
yeah.
that singular narrative.
Yeah.
And so as you think about how you can represent comms planning or brand strategy
totally.
In talking to a client, not just ripping through and getting to the line, the platform, the boilerplate, like knock them dead, drop the mic, walk out of the room. That was the best, you know, a line of the meeting. It was really what goes into
that.
No,
it's the magic's in the freaking ingredient.
Exactly.
Yes.
So
with that, we're going to talk about trends with Pierce Fox.
We'll be right back. Adlandia, we're back in the studio with the British crystal ball that is Pierce Fock.
Fock?
Fock.
Fox.
Founder of PSFK. Welcome to the show, Pierce.
Wonderful
to be here.
Thanks for being our first Brit.
Yeah.
Really?
Laura was really excited.
I'm so excited. I do very well with the Brits.
Do you?
I'll leave that there. So, Pierce, you've had a lot of action in 2017. Why don't you tell Adlandia a bit about PSFK, the founding of it, what
wow.
you set out to do?
It's a long journey, long story.
Well, let's
see. How long have you been around? PSFK
forever,
has been...
Forever.
2004?
2004 I started, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're like an OG.
I'm an OG, yeah.
I always think I
know what that means.
I always say that your friend, just because he's Scottish, I'm going to call him your friend, mm-hmm. which really you're probably not in any way, but your friend Pete Cashmore... You guys are like totally contemporaries in the blogosphere world,
mm-hmm.
right? That's kind of how you...
He was around at the same time.
Yes.
Did you also start
right.
in a garage or your bedroom?
Yeah.
Your dorm room?
I really was. I did the stereotypical in the bedroom, in my boxers.
Wow,
that's cool. Amazing.
Yeah. I started it. I came to America for love. I came to be with a girl and... I turned up and I had no job, no visa, and I and the girl would say, "Look, go get yourself a job, go do something, go find something to do, find some money." And when I turned up at the same time as Pete Cashmore was doing his thing and Nick Denton was doing his thing at Gawker, and you know there was a whole bunch of people behind Slate and everything else were like. All meeting up, and I managed to kind of turn up to kind of some of these events.
Hmm.
I saw, I came to an event, and this lady who I didn't know who was, she was, stood up in the corner, and I was already thinking about writing a blog, and I didn't know who she was, and she's like, and she's older, and I was like, and she said, okay, I'm going to start my own blog, and I was thinking, well, if she can write a blog, I can write a blog. She goes, yes, I'm going to call it Huffington Post.
Oh!
Yeah.
That worked out well for her, didn't
she? Yeah, better than me. the story is just to kind of illustrate a time where it was pre-social media, and the democratization of media hadn't happened. We were all, media was just very traditional, wasn't talking about the things we wanted to talk about.
Sure.
And I wanted to share all these cool ideas.
So did you have any expertise? Like, were you coming from a place of, like, media in your background? Like,
I worked in advertising my first part of my career.
Oh.
I ran away from advertising. So,
interesting.
Yeah. So at the end of the first dot-com boom, after we had all these wild parties, we all kind of, then we all got let go and fired, and we got very poor.
It's actually probably the most accurate historic, history of what happened in the 90s.
Yeah. So we had this great time, and then we all got spat out, and then I was like, I'm never going to work in advertising again. I ran a film company for a year.
Wow.
I worked with a couple of amazing film directors, young film directors. And instead of making movies, what we did is we wrote. So we spent all the time writing.
Mm.
So you're writing treatments, you're writing pictures, you're trying to make some money. And so by the end of that year, we'd made about 4 promos, had a short go to Sundance, but we were starving, had no money. I look back on it as this wonderful time, but at the time...
Like, you had something premiere at Sundance?
There's a little short, we had premiere.
Oh, what's it called?
It's called It's Okay to Drink Whiskey. It's a little short movie.
Oh, that's so British.
Yeah. It is. It's like, these grannies get killed. It's a horror.
I love it.
In a laundrette.
that's amazing.
Yeah. But yeah.
It could be Hoboken.
It could be Hoboken.
So anyway, I had a passion for writing. Met an American girl. Sort of like, I was starving and poor. So I was like, what else am I going to do? I might as well.
Follow her.
Yeah, go to jump on a plane. And so I turned up, had a passion for writing, met some people who told me about these blogs. And I was like, okay, what am I going to write about? And somehow that lens of consumer culture through advertising and creative ideas was just something that kind of resonated. And I just started writing about cool stuff.
We were talking about this. I mean, describe PSFK a couple of years into PSFK.
Yeah.
How you defined it then and how you're defining it today.
I think what happened is I had a mania for writing and passion. I was writing, then all these people around me wanted to write for PSFK. So all these friends from all around the world started writing.
Mm. Where was PSFK first published? Was it a .com or was it on .com. Like, it was, okay.
So, you know, 2 years in, I was writing all this crazy stuff and somebody sends me a report. Anheuser-Busch in the UK sends me a report. And it's a trend report some agency is publishing and says, can you do one of these? And I'd never seen a trend report before.
Hmm.
But it was just full of ideas that we were writing about on PSFK. Had expert opinion, people we were interviewing each day.
Hmm.
I was like, I could do this. And that's when we kind of started to think about how we monetized, I guess. Well, we could do trend reports.
And people will pay us.
People will pay us, yeah.
And what we think.
Mm-hmm. And that's how it just started to roll. And I got to then meet other people. I met some people who run had a startup agency called Anomaly at the time.
Yes, know them well.
Yeah, and I met this guy called Johnny Vulcan. And Johnny said to me, I like that blog that you're doing. What? And I was like, yeah, have you got any freelance work? And Johnny said, no, how many got in freelance work? Why don't you meet Carl Johnson? I met Carl and he said, I haven't got any freelance work either, but I do have an office space. We have this new office. And so they gave me office space. And for about 3 years, we worked out of Anomaly.
And were you working with their clients?
No, just had a desk. They lent me a computer.
Gave you some Wi-Fi.
Gave me a telephone. Didn't know what to do
with
that.
I think more agencies actually just need to do that with creative, smart people, and then they do need to rub elbows.
Yeah. I was hanging around with intelligent, bright, creative people.
Smart people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that Alexa and I have been talking a lot about on the show is sort of the tired approach to measurement and research that the industry is facing. So obviously PSFK has kind of become this cornerstone where both category-specific or just generalization observations are being made that are providing the bend on culture and context.
Sure.
What we feel that the industry is quite starved for is those sorts of real-time applicable insights that people can go and make strategic business decisions on as opposed to the legacy measurement companies that are spitting out six-month-old lag time data in the form of an index that people are making multi-million and billion-dollar decisions on. And those people are often early days in their careers or young buyers. They see a number. If it's over 100, that must mean that this is the right thing to buy. We should go call those people and potentially RFP them. How do you, peers, see PSFK coming of age, I'll call it, in a world where measurement and
data
and analytics has become a focal point
it's
for
like
the business?
It's just a buzzword. Now everybody's hungry for it, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been listening to the podcast and some of the conversations you've been having, and the ultimate question is like, what are you measuring? Why? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and what type of activity are you doing? And I think a lot of the conversation in the industry is still around, we need to monitor whatever the classic advertising, whether it's digital or offline, yeah?
Right.
And, you know, the conversations we're having are, you know, you got to create brand experiences. You got to, like, create this pop-up experience, but then you got to, like, distribute that experience across the web and things like that. So it's kind of complicated and 3D in some ways and rich.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it'd be interesting to kind of see those, if you talk about those measurement platforms, how those measurement platforms can cope with, you know, the impact of a pop-up experience in the shopping mall, followed by the content then that generates, followed by the market research data and the insights you get from that event.
And well, doesn't account for it, right? That's the issue.
Yeah.
If it's not trackable, it's not measurable.
I mean, you're still at the core. You still have the same mission.
What we've also done is focused a lot. And so when we started, you know, we wanted to have as many readers as we could, you know, and we had a great impact. We had by end of 2015, we had 2 million readers a month.
And that's all subscription?
Yeah.
No, that was non-subscription.
It was non-subscription.
Yeah. And then we decided to try to make some money out of paid content. And what that allowed us to do by putting a paywall up is have customers in place shop. And so suddenly we had thousands of people paying us. Instead of like trying to like get as many people to read the site so we can get an advertiser, to get a vodka advertiser advertising on our site.
Yeah, exactly.
And playing all those games.
Yeah.
Suddenly you only have 2,000 people and then they are your clients. And so what's been exciting the last couple of years is providing them with the insights and the ideas that they want. And it's measurable. You know, I email, you know, I remember I used to do create nice HTML emails and send them out to my lists. Now I send like, you know, 2,000 people a quick email with two lines on, you know, in the same way you'd send to your friends. And they're just kind of new. They're just going back. There's
is
a lot of going back
thinking,
to basics.
Stuff that you think is cool. Stuff
yeah, you're
that's
like, oh, I've got something
themes.
Going on. Yeah. You know, we say, oh, here's a link to a Google survey. You know, we sort of kind of gone past this sort of moment of like, we must create the biggest polished thing.
Yeah.
And let's get back and personal.
People want scrappiness,
And people just want real. Give it to straight. Give it to me straight.
Yeah.
Right?
What are the things people are coming to you most for in 2017? What were the big areas of focus that you saw a lot of traction against?
Well, we have a chatter researcher service. So within 3 days, we turn around a report for our members. I mean, there's some classic, typical technology areas that we talk about day in, day out. But it's amazing that people still are interested. So they're still interested in AR, VR, AI, and maybe things like personalization is also interesting. It's very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't one specific answer about how to personalize as well. So those are kind of curious and really interesting.
Yeah.
What does PSFK do better than any other trend spotter in the industry? Like, what is your secret sauce that you would say, you're going to come to us, you can't get this from anybody else?
I mean, I think we've proven ourselves to be the best when it comes to retail, mm-hmm. best when it comes to customer experience.
Yeah.
Year in and year out, we've been doing that. And I think that's where our focus has gone. And I think we provide, you know, probably the industry, the pioneering viewpoint each year about what the big ideas are. And I think at the same time, we are constructive and progressive. We're not trying to go, look, it's doom and gloom. It's all retail Armageddon.
Right.
We're like, there's great opportunity. There's great stuff to hit. So here are the things you could do to get there. And, you know, our trend reports have moved from reports to playbooks a bit more. So we're a bit more like,
I love that.
Here are the actions that you can take And so that's kind of one of our big changes.
But if we could, like, and Cam, we can rewind this when Piers is talking about moving from trend report to playbook.
And, you know, our trend reports have moved from reports to playbooks a bit more. So we're a bit more like,
I love that.
Here are the actions that you can take.
And I think that's it. And I think that's what this industry is starving for. If there's one thing I'm going to take away from this conversation, it's that we are missing the actionable insight, not just on what the trend is telling us and not the analysis that we should be taking away from it, but it's what are the questions that the industry has mm-hmm. that all of us as a community are asking in silos, but really there's just this inherent gap of education that we're not acknowledging. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if there's one ask I have as, like, a marketer, it's like, please, Piers, raise your hand and say in 2017, these are the three areas that brand marketers are missing the mark on.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, mm-hmm. kill by DIY. What would you kill in the world? Doesn't matter. Not people. It's weird. What would you buy and what would you do yourself?
What would I kill? Legacy brands.
Ooh. So consistent.
Yeah, I mean, is that consistent?
Does
that always happen?
Do you think every legacy brand,
you know, I think
a brand
that's going to build around, that's built off nothing. You know, they lost their heritage and it's a marketing brand issue. You know, like an energy drink or something like that.
Mm. What would you buy?
What would I buy today? I want to buy that new Alfa Romeo. Can I buy that? Am I allowed to buy that?
Yeah, somebody said, so I read
a headline that it's a good car.
Were you about to say Business Insider? Goodbye? It was a good car.
Good car. Yeah. The best car you could buy. Probably Business Insider. They do that sort of stuff. Okay. Yeah.
And what would you do yourself?
I would return to writing. I would write a book or something. PSFK was a writing project.
Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to be a business, and so maybe I'd, you know, one day I'd like to kind of get back to writing.
All right.
Yeah.
I love it.
We'll be looking.
Piers Fox, thank you so much. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye. So, Piers, we are so thrilled to know that your travels to America both ended in a kick-ass business and a happy wife, happy life.
We had so much fun with the salty Englishman in our booth. So, big thanks to Piers. Thank you, as always, Cameron Drews, Matt Turk,
Andy Bowers, our friends and family at Panoply,
and Adlandia. We will be back in 2 weeks.
Full disclosure, our opinions are our own.